60% of all the men and women released from prison return to prison in the first 3 years. So statistically, your odds of succeeding are very small.
I have been in and out of the system since I was 8 years old. My mother had me when she was relatively young. She was 17 years old. My father was in prison since I was 5 years old, and he was never around when he was out of prison.
Well, when I first came to Sing Sing and I went to B Block, it's just like this feeling that came over me. It was dark, it was dirty, it was gloomy. And I remember that night silently crying to myself, oh man, what did I do to myself? What am I gonna do with my life? After 20 years, I'm gonna do it.
Voices of participants in Sing Sing Prison's Hudson Link program, one of only a handful of prison-based degree-granting college programs in the country. It's called Hudson Link for Higher Education. Sean Pica is the director of Hudson Link and a graduate of the program. He served time for murder and emerged with a college degree. The program is the subject of a new documentary called 0% and takes its name from the fact that none of the inmates who participated in Hudson Link returned to jail. Pica told Ann Strangchamps about serving time for his murder conviction.
I went in when I was 16, and when I came home in 2002, I had more time in prison than out of prison. And when I left the gates of Sing Sing, I was 33 years old. The only thing I had with me was my college degree. It was a pretty scary time because I'd watched so many people come back over the years. And I found out soon enough that the only thing I needed was that degree. And it really, really leveled the playing ground for me.
Why? What's so important about a college degree if you're somebody getting out of prison?
I think that even while I went to school, and there were many of the older guys that would see me and say, hey, it's great you're staying positive and going to school while the rest of us are going to play cards or work out or watch TV. But just remember that even though that's a positive thing, it's never going to help you when you get out. I mean, that was the constant theme. And then when I did finally go home, one of the first jobs I got, I mean, I went in there confident because I really thought, this is not going to help me anyway. I'm going through the motions, but as soon as I get to the part where I say I was in prison and I was in prison for 16 years, they're going to just tell me, well, thanks, but no thanks. Every single job that I've had since I've been home, I'm 9 years now, I've had four different jobs, every one of them in the social services field, but each one of those organizations, one by one, would say, oh my goodness, we would love to have you on the staff. And it's one of those things, I think, in the social services field where, you know, that kind of background is really helpful.
So we should back up here. You went to prison when you were 16 for murder.
I did.
What happened?
Wow, I want to just say poor decision-making, but that really minimizes everything. I shot and killed my friend's father, and really, I mean, in the process of making that decision, did not think past anybody but myself. As a 16-year-old kid, I thought about it. I really went through the motions of thinking about the impact it would have on my life, what was going to happen, but I was going to help my friend even at the expense of myself. I never thought past me. I never thought about my family, my community, my friends. I mean, the implications of what I did reached so far beyond myself that, I mean, I didn't understand what I was doing.
This was a girl who came to you?
Yes, it was a friend of mine that I grew up with, and she had explained to me that there were things going on in her home that, long story short, her father shouldn't have been doing, and I shot and killed her father.
She asked you to?
She did.
What did you say when she asked you?
I said I would think about it, and then I did it.
I think I've read your parents were in law enforcement?
My father and my stepmother were both New York City cops at the time. My mom and her husband were nurses. So I was in a helping kind of family, but...
Helping kind of family, but on the other hand, more than any other kid, you must have known what the consequences might be.
Yeah, it was never about the consequences for me.
You didn't think about what after?
I never really thought about anybody else but myself. Like, it was knowing that I was going to end up in jail and that, well, you know what, I was going to do whatever I had to do to help a friend. And when you go to prison, your whole family goes to prison. And that was the part that I didn't get. This wasn't a judgment that you were going to just make and deal with as a 16-year-old. Every single person around me, from friends to family to you know, aunts and uncles, the neighborhood parents. I mean, everybody felt like they had let me down for the decision that I made. And it was really, really unbelievable. I can't even explain what it was like to feel like I had let so many people down with my own decision.
So you had thought that you were doing a favor for a friend, that you were killing a bad guy who was hurting somebody.
I thought I was going to do the right thing for the wrong reason.
And you were willing to take the consequences and go to jail? Was kind of as far as you got in your
that
mind?
That was what I was thinking, yeah.
What happened once you got to jail?
Wow, I woke up in a world I didn't know existed. I mean, it was very different than anything that I had ever seen.
I've read that you said somewhere, thank God I went to jail.
Well, I feel like from the direction that I was going in, I feel like prison saved me in one sense, because I was a 16-year-old kid that just thought I knew it all. Well, what 16-year-old doesn't? But, you know, no direction. There was definitely times when I thought that I escaped. Prison was my way out.
Because it forced you to deal with what
you'd
done?
Myself and my own issues, and made me grow up really fast and mature. And then, of course, the end result was I'm using that experience, those 16 years, to help others. And don't get me wrong, if I could turn back the hands of time, I would not go through this again. But I did go through it, and I'm using this experience to help others.
So the thing that's remarkable here, well, there's so many things that are remarkable, but one of them is that having seen this film, 0%, you've used this education, you've turned yourself around, and now you're helping other people, but so are all those other guys who are in the program.
Yeah. Every one of the men and women that have been through the program are now home. I think it's 71 as of this week. Every one of those men and women are in the social services field. They're service coordinators, they're caseworkers, HIV/AIDS outreach coordinators, they're helpers. So they're really, they're going back to communities that they had once hurt, but now as helpers. And it's very empowering for them, but it's also very empowering for the younger generation that sees a very tough group of people returning back to the community, but instead of coming back as tough guys, they're coming back as healers, as helpers. And, you know, instead of carrying weapons, they're carrying textbooks. Many of them have gone back for graduate degrees. So now they're home and they're continuing. And it's really been a powerful piece, especially since some of us go back to high schools and we speak during the day at different high schools. And we have a very powerful message, but it's an unusual message.
We know that the best opportunity for an individual who's coming out of a correctional facility is going to be a college degree.
I came a long way from being in the streets, being a destructive young man with no high school diploma, to coming to prison, and I'm becoming a positive role model to a lot of the young guys in the school building.
What kind of guys make the commitment, make the effort to do this?
This is one of the issues that we have, that it's an older student that gets in. Because for the most part, there are exceptions, but for the most part, the younger students, they're not ready. Because there's a lot going on. There's a lot of sacrifice. There's a lot of, you know, you have to really put your money where your mouth is to step into that classroom. And it's a scary proposition. Nobody wants to look like a dummy. And if you think about it, going to prison is not rock bottom. Failing in prison is rock bottom. So many of these men and women get to prison, and it's a seamless transition right back to whatever they were doing in the streets. So now they were running a block in East Harlem. Now they're running a block in A block in the prison. So they were selling drugs here. Now they're selling drugs there. So to actually break from that, to try something different, to go into a classroom and take a chance that you can't do that is very scary. And I love the fact that part of my job is seeing that change. When a student steps in there for that first semester, and by the end of that semester says, wow, I can do this.
Do you remember the first class that did that for you?
It really wasn't that way for me. I've always struggled as a student academically. So for me, I remember going through some pre-college stuff before I was even allowed to get into college. And I was doing okay with that stuff. But once I sat in a classroom, I remember getting papers back with C's and C minuses and saying, wow, I'm going to have to put some work in this. This is not something I'm just going to, you know, show up and do and do well in. And that, you know, carrying a textbook to work, finding time during the day to read and do homework and then go to, from work directly to the classroom. You got to remember, for me, it was in the 80s. And in the 80s, in the New York State Department of Corrections, everyone was required to work 7 days a week. So I would leave my cell at 4 a.m., go to the bakery, work in the bakery until 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and go from there to school, and then get out of school at 9 o'clock, 8:30, 9 o'clock. So somewhere in that time, I had to sit down in a corner somewhere while the rest of the guys were playing cards or whatever during their break times and study. And that was not easy for me.
You've told your story so much, and you still tell it actively to help other people and young people. I guess I'm figuring by now you've got a public story you can tell, you know, that you can get through okay. Is there a private story still, images, things that you wish you could get rid of that you can't?
You know what? I've been telling my story for so many years now. Even when I was still inside, I remember I was probably 18 or 19 and had a couple of years in already. And one of the older guys came to me at Comstock and said, I don't know if you know it, Sean, but there's a youth group here where the local teenagers come into the prison, you know, once a month. And there's a few of us that are cleared to the prison, and we go down and we talk to them about prison life and drugs and alcohol and second chances and decisions. And they said, you know, we'd like for you to be involved. And I said, oh, no. I said, I can't even help myself. How am I possibly going to help these kids? And the guy said, oh, no, we're not asking. It's Monday at 6. We'll see you there. So, all right, sorry. I mean, I thought you were asking. And I went down there, and really for me, it wasn't about helping anybody else. There was such a big brother syndrome thing going on, and I was surviving literally under the wing of these guys. So I was going to show up because they said to, and that was it. I never thought about what I was about to say. And I walked in there that day, and one of the guys said to me, well, you'll talk about, you know, prison life. And I was the last guy to speak. And the first couple guys spoke about, you know, drugs and alcohol and choices and education. And it got to me, and I started to speak about what it was like for my family, for me to go to prison. I remember walking out of there, and everybody was crying. And Al said to me, Al was about, you know, 6'4", about 280 pounds. He said, Sean, that was brilliant. I said, I didn't do it on purpose. I don't know where it came from, because I hadn't cried in so many years. And I haven't stopped crying since.
Sean Pica is the executive director of Hudson Link for Higher Education, and a subject of the documentary called 0%. Anne Strangchamp spoke with him.